Welcome to Business Day Spotlight, the podcast where we get straight to the heart of what's shaping business and the economy in South Africa. I'm your host, Dise Tsomotsweneng, acting editor of Business Day, and today we are diving into the banking world. Tyme Bank has been turning heads with its rapid growth in a space that's already buzzing with competition. Joining me to unpack all of this is Cheslin Jacobs, the Chief Commercial Officer of Tyme Bank. We are talking strategy, customer growth, and what it takes to stand out in a crowded market. You don't want to miss this one. Cheslin, welcome.
First, let's just go back, take a step back and tell us where, where we are. After the last time we spoke, I think the main thing that came out of my conversation with Kuhn was that in a few years' time, this company could potentially IPO in Joburg or NASDAQ.
So
I just wanted to see if that's still the desire of shareholders. Is it worth now? It's 30 billion rand. It's a unicorn.
Somewhere. So what was it? At the last?
Off the back of December's capital. And so in December, we raised 250 million US. And that took the overall valuation of the group to 1.5 billion US. Yeah. And that raise was led by Nubank. And they led with about 150 million US.
Yeah.
The important thing about that lead, though, is that do you know what Nubank is worth?
I know it's I don't know what it's worth, but I know it's a.
I'll tell you.
Yeah.
So okay. Nubank's market cap, when the last time I checked, was $66 billion.
Jesus.
Now,
yeah.
If you go and take the market cap of every single bank in this country, you add them up, they don't get to Nubank's number. Right. So Nubank on its own, on market cap, is bigger than every single bank in this country combined.
That's one measure, Cheslin. Those are assets. Does it come close?
I can go check, but the assets is massive. They got 100 million customers.
Okay. All right.
So 100 million customers across three markets, predominantly Brazil, 93 million customers in Brazil.
Yeah.
But here's the important thing on the other two markets are relatively young, Colombia and Mexico, 6 million in Colombia, 1 million in Mexico, but they're very young markets for Nubank.
Yeah.
But at 93 million customers in Brazil, one in every third Brazilian, not adult Brazilian, one in every third Brazilian is already a customer of Nubank.
Wow.
So it's a ratio I love. In Tyme Bank, in 8 days or 9 days' time, we'll have 11 million customers.
Yeah.
In our limitation is that you have to be a 16-year-old South African to have a Tyme Bank account. So at 11 million, one in every, call it four, 3.5 to 4 eligible South Africans already have a Tyme Bank account. Now that you journos and analysts then love to ask the question, how many of them are primary bank customers? How many of them active?
Yeah.
It's the wrong question to ask, right? So why primary banking used to matter or still matters in traditional banks?
Okay.
Is that the cost to serve those customers, one, and the cost to acquire those customers, two, in traditional models are at least 10x what ours is.
Okay.
At least.
Okay.
Now, if you're operating and to acquire and to service your customers at 10x ours, in essence, you must probably need 10x their assets, 10x their income of what we need for that customer to be profitable in our business.
Right.
So today, we can serve a social grant recipient profitably every single month.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
On our current fee structure. Right now, other banks will say, but we can serve them profitably too. But so we said, let's be candid, right? So who's the biggest social grant? Who's the biggest social grant, call it benefactor in commercial banks today? It's Capitec. right? We know that their cost of acquisition is at least 10x ours. We know that their cost of service is at least 10x ours. But let's look at the way they've priced their product, right? So Capitec, you have to pay a 7 rand for annual fee.
Okay.
Whether you transact or not, you've got to have either 20 rand or 30 rand minimum balance. So that's how they can serve that customer profitably, because no matter what that customer does, they have to earn income for Capitec. 7 rand 50, they haven't transacted yet.
Yep.
A 30 rand minimum balance. Now, I know that it's public information. So just on the general grant base, Capitec has over 4 million general grant recipients. Now, if you take 4 million times 7 rand 50, that takes you to 28 plus 2, it's 30 million rand.
Mm-hmm.
And you take 4 million times 30 rand, which is 4 times 3 is 12, is 120 million rand in treasury that Capitec has access to and the customer doesn't.
Hmm.
On their models, they can do it that way. If they were to change their model to ours, zero monthly management fee, zero minimum balance, they could never do that. I don't think they can make the claim that we make it, we can serve this customer profitably.
Hmm.
And that's why I say often the question around primary banking activity is probably the wrong. It's the wrong question to ask us, because it's not a requirement for us in the, call it the technical definition of that, oh, you get your salary paid.
Yeah.
However, what we do see though, so remember, how old is the bank? The bank's 6 years old, they said. So we're 6 years old, we're going to need, like I said, 11 million customers, most probably next week sometime, maybe the week after. Right? But so if you go back 6 years ago, right, when we started February 2019, South Africa never had a problem of South Africans unbanked.
Yeah.
So if you go back into your literature or your archives, you'll see that 6 years ago, we never had an unbanked problem in South Africa. Right? Mm. Banks have done a really good job in the country of creating access. They've done a good job.
Yeah.
Whether Tide Bank existed or not, if you really wanted a bank account, it wasn't that hard to get it. Yeah, it would take a little bit, lot longer than we do it, but it wasn't impossible to get one.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm.
So we knew that going in, that if we're going to be able to convert this, so the day he opens a Tyme Bank account, I know he's at a minimum has one other bank card in his wallet.
Right.
At a minimum, he's going to have one other bank card in his wallet. So we knew that was our going in position.
Yeah.
Right. The real challenge for us is, okay, cool. Tisetso's got now he's got two bank cards. He's got the one he had before. And now he's got this yellow one from time. Like, I must say black. I mustn't say yellow. And now, if we go back to the examples of perfect, he says, now put this additional time bank card in his wallet. There was no financial burden for him to jump to get it. So he's going to test this thing. He's got 1,000 rand every month. Right? So let's say bank number one currently has got 100% share of his wallet. The question for us is, how do I start eating into that share of wallet?
Right.
Right now, the interesting thing is we can see in all our vintages, we're eating into everybody's share of wallet.
Okay.
Right? And progressively, T-Sets gives us 100 rand. So now we've got 10% of his wallet, the other bank has 90%.
Right.
Right? He's, okay, this thing works, doesn't cost me anything. Next month, we get 200 rand. Now we've got 20%, the other bank has 80%. And very quickly, we get to this point where it's potentially 50-50.
Right, right.
Right, but now if you do that calculation, is that your salary is still getting paid into bank one, the payroll. So when you get on the day you get paid, the bank account that gives you a notification is the other bank.
Right.
Right. But the next day you do a transfer, pull it off your wallet into Tyme Bank.
Mm.
Right. Why are you not a primary bank customer of ours?
Fair enough.
Because here's the interesting thing.
Yeah.
If I promise you, I share 50% of your wallet with another bank, you are worth way more to me than you are to them. Because remember what our going in position was, right? My going in position was zero.
Yeah.
I've moved from zero to 50.
So you've eaten someone's lunch.
Dropped from 100 to 50. The only person who's gained here is me.
True, yes. Yeah.
And the client.
And the client. but even in the 80-20 scenario, this is, I've moved from zero to 20.
You've eaten someone's lunch.
The other one has gone from 100 to 80.
Yes.
And that's what I always say. I think when people ask us this primary bank thing, it's the wrong question to ask.
Okay.
It's about, for me, it's more about the progress we're making into, call it eating into the, not eating into, but converting customer share of wallet.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Now I don't know who you bank with. Right, but let's assume it's not us.
I'm going to show you an email I got from TymeBank. So let's assume it's not us. But I think it's safe to assume that your and my financial needs are very similar. But look at this. Can you read that line?
Your bank charges this month were 26 Rand. Hi, yeah, okay.
I hate it when I see those numbers.
Yeah.
Because it means I touched cash that month.
Okay.
And because if you don't touch cash with TymeBank, that number can be zero.
Right.
But for that 26 Rand in February, so I did 134 different transactions.
Okay. I'm with you. I get all of that. You know, I want to get to the point where how you make money. Because I'll tell you this. I had a conversation with the Discovery Bank CEO, or I think it was Adrian.
Yeah.
You know, he said something very interesting. I mean, their non-interest income is the highest in the sector because their client base, they engage with the product more than anybody else in the market. So, and then you have, so, I mean, I can see you challenging the thinking around here. So I want to hear it. I think our listeners would love to hear.
I think that's a great question.
Yeah.
And if I was anybody at Discovery, I wouldn't say that as proudly as they have.
Okay.
Right? So they're saying their non-interest income, which means their fee income. If a bank says my non-interest income, that must mean that their fee income is increasing. Now, the question is...
I think what they mean is that the people interact with their product a lot more than they do.
But then how do they generate non-interest income?
Because of the fees, right? It's
right, which means customers are paying. It's either customers are paying or there's commissions through the transactions they're doing that customers don't pay for.
Yeah.
Now banks around the world make money the same way.
Yeah.
So banks around the world make what they call NFI, so net fee income.
Yeah.
NII, net interest income, right?
Yeah.
So they were referring to net fee income. So we make money in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And we do make a decent amount of fee income, but not by charging fees levied on a customer. Right? So, for example, if you swipe your TymeBank card, it doesn't cost you anything. Now, at most banks, it doesn't cost you for that transaction because it's often included in what they call your bundle fee, right? So, at Discovery, you're going to pay 300 grand a month, and they tell you you can have unlimited card swipes.
Sure.
But at TymeBank, you pay 0 Rand a month monthly fee, and you also have unlimited card swipes.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but how does that bank make money from a card swipe? You've got interchange through the association through the normal banking model.
Sure.
Right. So if you swipe a Discovery bank card for X amount of value, Discovery makes a certain amount of rand from that transaction or cents from that transaction without the customer incurring any fee. Right. If you do the same transaction with your TymeBank card, right. So let's say you go to a let's say you're filling in fuel. And you've got this big Land Cruiser Prado, it's 120 liters.
Sure.
You fill in 60 liters with your Discovery bank card and you swipe it, and you fill in the other 60 liters with your TymeBank card, which means the cost to you is the same for the fuel, right? 60 liters, 60 liters. Discovery would make exactly the same amount of revenue from that transaction as TymeBank would. Exactly the same.
Right.
So that's what I'm saying, I wouldn't. We wouldn't be proud to say we make the most NFI because it means we're levying fees on customers.
Mm.
Right? Now if you look at banks around the world, and this is what it actually annoys me about South African banks.
Yeah.
So in South Africa, we've got a very sophisticated financial system. Very sophisticated. It's first world kind of stuff.
Right.
Right? Top three, most probably top three, top five the world over.
Yeah.
In infrastructure, sophistication, how well developed, how well regulated, etc. Right? But now, if you go and compare banks' income statements in South Africa versus banks' income statements in other markets who compete with us on this, if you go to the UK today, right, their banks are maybe making 10% of their total income on fee income and 90% of their total income on interest income in a low interest rate environment. Right? You go to Germany, they're similar, very similar. Even go to the Philippines where we have our other bank, very similar. Right? But in South Africa, banks are almost at a 50-50 split. 50% of income from fees, 50% of income from interest. Now, if you're making 50% of your income from fees, guess who the people paying those fees are? It's you and I.
Say what you want to say, Cheslin.
Is that because we as consumers don't understand how banks make money, we've accepted this for as long as we can. Right?
Yeah.
Not the reality with a South African consumer, there's a massive knowledge gap. Right? But here's the interesting thing I always say. What does your customer of tomorrow look like? Now, my son is 10 years old. When I was 10 years old, I didn't know half the things this boy knows today.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, the reality is when he has to make his first decision about which bank he's going to bank with, he's going to know a lot more than I did.
Yeah.
Right? The question is, what is this other bank's answer going to be when he says, but why are you charging me so much fees? Now, I don't think their models are protecting themselves against the customer of tomorrow.
Yeah.
Right? Now, and the test you must do to set, so you obviously have a decent network, specifically of international people. Just ask them what they pay for transactional banking, where they live or where they come from. It's the one thing everybody who comes to South Africa to work here from another country around the world, they cannot understand why we have to pay as much as we do for transactional banking. They just can't understand it because it's not prevalent the world over.
Yeah.
It's prevalent in South Africa because that's always the way we've done it. Right? And as South Africans, when we don't know something, we choose not to hold these businesses accountable because we don't know what question to ask.
So it's accepted, kind of. so, yeah. Right? Which reminds me, I don't know if you've been in the
tech. The analogy I always make is that I see TymeBank as the solo artist.
Yeah.
And we've got a brilliant song to sing, and we're singing that song. But we're singing up against the choir. The choir is the industry. They're singing an absolutely rubbish song. But guess what? A choir can always sing louder.
Yeah.
So in the early days, you hear the song that sung the loudest. But we'll continue singing the right song. And eventually, our song will pierce through. And that's the work we're doing. So 11 million customers in 6 years. I know Discovery says their net fee income is growing faster, the fastest in industry. There are BA reports, regulatory reports, that every bank has to submit to the Reserve Bank every month around deposits. Right? Go and see whose deposits are growing the fastest.
Who is it?
Go and see. Right?
You were setting up a trap for me.
Our deposits are growing faster than anybody else.
Yeah.
On aggregate numbers, they've got more money in their bank accounts than we do. Right. But they serve a very different customer.
Sure, yeah.
Right? But the rate of growth, our rate of deposit growth is faster than anybody else's. Now, again, the question you ask, if our deposits are growing faster than anybody else's, there's not that much more money in the South African economy. Right? The size of the pie hasn't increased that much.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? If our deposits are growing faster than anybody else and the pie hasn't really grown, we're just taking a bigger piece of the pie.
Yeah. Yeah. I do have I do have a TymeBank account, by the way. So.
And you better have money in gold safe and fixed deposit. Nobody's paying you higher interest rates than we are.
Right. Right. Okay. All right.
Now, that's another fascinating thing, Tisetso. To think about. And I'd love you to question the industry on this, right? So, and it'd be interesting, ask an accountant friend of yours if you guys have fancy finance people at the publication. I'm not an accountant by any stretch of the imagination, but I've got a decent understanding of the economics of money.
Yeah.
Right? Now, every bank in this country, when you look at savings, right? Every bank in this country pays anybody with more money. They pay them a higher interest rate on their savings. Right? So if you've got 100,000 rand to save, you will earn a higher interest rate than me, who only has 10,000 rand to save. But why is the economics of the money any different for the bank? I don't know what there's no answer. Because what's the job of a bank actually? So a bank takes our depositors' money, right? And what do they do with it?
Well, they fund the economy.
Lend it to other people to acquire assets.
Yeah.
Right? So let's take this example we've just made. So you save 100,000 rand. The bank pays you 10% just to keep the calculations easy. Mm. New Zealand saves 10,000 rand. The bank pays me 5% interest, right? Mm. Poncho comes along and Poncho wants to buy a house of 110,000 rand. Whose money do they give her? They give her your and my money because they pulled our money together.
Yeah.
Right? And they say, Poncho, here's 110,000 rand. But they don't tell you, you know what, 100,000 is to sit, so it's 10,000 is chestnuts.
Yeah.
They give her the 110,000 rand because she meets the risk profile and they convince she's going to pay it back. If she doesn't pay it back, they'll guarantee our money some way, right? But do they charge her a different interest rate on the 100,000 rand and a different interest rate on the 10,000 rand, or do they charge her the same interest rate on all the money?
Well, the same, right? Because it's one person.
All right. Yeah. So let's say they're now charging her 17% on the 110,000 rand.
Mm.
Right? Which means they off that 110, they're charging a 17%. They're giving back to you 10%, which means their margin on that money is 7%.
Mm.
Right? But to Cheslin, they only pay 5%.
Mm.
So the margin on Cheslin's money is actually 12%. But Cheslin's the so-called poor person in the country. Right? So the question I'm asking, are big banks actually creating the same divide we've always had from an income inequality perspective, because they're treating the wealthier person's money as more worthwhile or worthy than the so-called poorer person's money?
Mm. Why do
they pay different interest rates? Because you don't have a lot of money. I don't understand it. They will make up a story as to why it's acceptable.
Yeah.
Right? But in a country where we've got the highest Gini coefficient in the world, right?
Mm.
And what a Gini coefficient measures is your measure of income inequality.
Mm.
We've got the highest in the world. Product constructs like that doesn't help that situation.
Yeah.
We don't do that, by the way. We pay everybody the same interest rate on their savings, irrespective of how much they save.
Yeah. Cheslin, is this your personal... because I can kind of sense that this is something you're passionate about. It's not just a professional goal that's like, it's also a personal crusade in a sense. Is this, is that a fair assessment? What informs that? How did you grow up and what?
I think I grew up like most, call it non-white South African kids. I grew up on the Cape Flats in Cape Town. I went to public schools. I grew up in a house that with my grandparents that they got moved to as a result of Group Areas Act. So a very similar story to most South Africans.
Yeah.
But what I always say is that it's the mistake we've made is we always think the labela is money. We now think the labela is money. The labela is not money.
Mm.
The labela is information and knowledge.
Yeah.
And what I always, and again, and I think this would apply the same to you, Tisetso. Mm. I always say if my parents only knew more about money, not if they had more money, if they knew more about money, they may have made very, very different decisions.
Mm.
And if they have made very, very different decisions, it must probably mean it would have meant something very, very different for me and my brothers.
Yeah.
Now that equation would be the same for many, many South African families today.
Yeah.
And it's not a function of how much money you have. It's a function of how much you know how to manage that money.
Hmm.
Now something like that interest rate difference.
Yeah.
One, firstly, it doesn't help you or encourage a proper discipline or culture of saving in lower income households, right? Because when they see the big differential, they're like, what's the point? Right? One. Number two, but also by not allowing them to do that, they never ever get to experience the optionality that strong savings behavior ends up giving you one day.
Yeah.
Now it's less about what it means for you and I, that behavior. It's way less about what it means for you and I.
Sure.
But it's way more about what it means for mine and your kids. Right? And that's why I'm saying it's not a function of how much money you have, but it's a function of how we use the money we take today to set up a much better future for the next generation. Right? Yeah. And as a country and as an industry, I think we get that wrong. Right? So TymeBank is has largely been cause driven. We are a very cause driven organization.
Yeah.
I agree from day one.
Yeah.
And it's because it's this personal crusade, you know, is that I've seen way too many people like you and I get left by the wayside because we didn't know enough.
Yeah.
I'm now in a position where I know a lot more, so I can make extremely sound financial decisions. But I don't know it because of the position I'm in.
Yeah.
Right. I've been on this journey for a long time, but I'm convinced that we can get enough people to know about it that fundamentally changes what the trajectory of this country looks like.
Yeah.
Right. And it's a simple thing. Like we do it with our staff. I do it with our staff, for example. And if you look at some of the constructs, is that some of these decisions we make changes the reality of the schools we can send our kids to.
Yeah.
It changes the reality of what we can put in their lunchboxes. Now, I say what school and what we can put in their lunchboxes, those are two important things that largely will dictate what their future potential looks like.
Yeah.
But we just don't know these things.
Yeah.
Right? And therefore, don't think we're doing anything wrong. Not that you don't want to kind of put this year of guilt on the generation before us.
Yeah.
But because they don't know, they're not in a position to make what we know the better decision is.
Yeah.
Right? And I genuinely think what we've built is slowly becoming a bigger and bigger platform to create this message.
Yeah.
Right? But like I said, solo artists, we're singing the song, the big guys are singing a different song.
Yeah.
They've done amazing work, don't get us wrong. I think they play massively important roles in communities and societies, but they're definitely not doing everything they can.
Right. So it would be fair to describe you as a social activist of some sort, or a capitalist with a socialist heart.
Yeah. So I think businesses must be successful, but I think you can do good by doing good.
Got you.
Okay. And when I say you can do good by doing good, is that you don't have to live like a pauper.
Yeah.
Because who you're looking after are so-called less wealthy people.
Yeah.
So I genuinely think you can do good by doing good.
Yeah.
And South Africa happens to be, it's always these things, our business model makes sense at scale. So the more people we impact, the better our business will do.
Sure.
But our business won't continue doing well at the expense of our customers.
Yeah.
Our business will do well because of the value we provide to our customers.
Yeah.
Right? Not at the expense of them.
Yeah, that seems straightforward. But on a personal basis, I mean, I want to give our reader some color about you. I mean, at least I got the Cape Flats bit, which I quite like that. I'm going to try. I'm just trying to give our readers and listeners some color about you personally. I mean, what drives you? How do you describe yourself? Or how do people around you describe you? What do they say?
So, most probably the word a lot of people have used more recently is most probably dense. They said so.
Yeah.
I can be that. Fortune doesn't want to agree or disagree, but I can.
Yeah.
I can be intense.
Sure.
But also, when I say intense, I put my mind to making sure we get South Africa to where I think we need to be with TymeBank and the work we do, and I'm all bent on it.
Okay.
So when I say intense, I'm going to push that envelope all the time, every single day.
Yeah.
Impact is important for me. Impact's massively important for me.
Yeah.
You know, I see a future for my kids that are very different to the South Africa I live in.
Yeah.
And we should all have a responsibility to influence what that looks like.
Yeah.
You know, is that I think we would have failed our kids that when they are our age, they complain about the same stuff we complain about today.
Yeah.
We would have failed them. My view is we would have failed them.
Yeah.
And I think through the work we do, can genuinely change that.
Yeah.
You know, so that's important to me. And again, because I come from those communities, you see potential all the time out. And you just see the system reduce what that potential can be systematically.
Hmm.
Right? And I think the work we do can change that. Is it changing it at the pace I want it to change? No, it's not.
Yeah.
But even if it changes very, very fast, and you ask me that same question, I'm going to say it's not changing at the pace I want it.
Right.
Because we're always going to want it to change faster.
Yeah.
It's a fiber in our business around that ambition. It's about being ambitious. It's about pushing those boundaries.
Yeah.
And we always think we can reach more people. We always think we can make larger impact. And that becomes really important. It becomes really important to us. Like something we don't talk about enough from an impact this business has had on societies and communities around the country, is that we've got 1,000 kiosks across the country, right? And next to each of those kiosks, there's a young person we call an ambassador.
True.
We've put 6,000 young people through our ambassador program to date.
Hmm.
All right? And most probably, and we can update, I'll go. But the last time I looked at the numbers, 95% of those 6,000 young people, being an ambassador was their first job.
Yeah.
Now, how many banks would take that chance on young people? I put them in the firing line, being your voice, being your ears, eyes, on your front line, on the ground, talking to your customers. And that network of young people have written 80% of all of our new business to date. Right? As far as we possibly can, we try and localize that recruitment. Where are you from originally? Are you a Joburg, born and bred?
No. I'm from Sasolburg, the Vaal. So.
Okay, cool. So that's far south, right?
Yeah,
What's it? Orange Farm,
yeah.
Everton, all those kind of areas. Yeah. Right? So we've got kiosks in that area.
Yeah.
And why I say, but we've got kiosks in Pangeni, we've got kiosks in Ndansani, we've got kiosks in Ofimbaba in the Eastern Cape.
Right.
We've got kiosks in Giani, in Limpopo, in Louis Trichardt, etc. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And what we try and do as much as possible is localize that recruitment.
Right.
Right. So what we say is we don't want an ambassador to have to take more than one taxi to get to work.
Right.
Right. So why is that important? Because that means you can empower the community, create an opportunity for somebody in the community where we are actually doing work.
Right. Yeah. That's a very interesting point you make. I mean, because if you see even companies now, I mean, newer ones, I mean, they're looking for offices, like head offices, and they employ thousands and thousands of people, but they could go and set it up in Centurion somewhere, very far from, you know, why not set it up? I mean, if you know, like 80% of your staff is from Soweto, why not set it up somewhere in a, you know, have a head office somewhere closer in, I don't know, like...
I
don't. I never understand that. That you know, people want to be in fancy areas where there are restaurants, and but you know, only like 5 or even 1% of the people can afford to get to those head offices, and the rest of the staff. I mean, they have to take multiple taxis. It's just
100%. Exactly. So, and we've consciously made this decision. So if you think about it from a pure business perspective, what's the benefit for the business? We know that South Africans sometimes can't go to work because they don't have transport money.
Yeah.
But if you're only taking one taxi to get to the store,
yeah,
your burden, your expense burden on transport to work is at the lowest it possibly can be.
Yeah.
Right. So selfishly for the business, our absenteeism is probably going to be lower than anybody else we compete with.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Number two, if I'm hiring somebody who has to take one taxi from work, the nice thing about South Africa, we a super diverse melting pot, right?
Yeah.
But if you're coming from that community, guess what language you speak?
The same language.
Now you most probably live in suburban Joburg today. Right? And if you go back to
the Vaal, you know
way more of your neighbors there than you've ever known in your suburb here.
It's true, yeah.
Right? Because those communities are exactly that. They are communities.
Yeah.
Now, if you see a young person now in Boxer Orange Farm, 90% of the customers from Boxer Orange Farm lives in Orange Farm.
Mm.
They're going to see one of their own working there. Right? Trust deficit.
Approachable.
Instantly reduced.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Speak the local language, et cetera, et cetera. Right? But also, we know we've got a youth unemployment problem in South Africa.
Yeah, Justin, are you sure you're not giving away your trade secrets here? Remember, I'm a journalist.
I dare them to try and replicate it.
Okay.
So here's the thing. You would have seen Pick n Pay has done this deal with FNB, right?
Yeah.
Do you think it's a bad thing or a good thing for us?
I mean, based on what we've just spoken about, I mean, from your perspective, I mean, this is what you would like to see. But had we not had this discussion, I would have probably thought I would have taken a different. Yeah.
But here's the interesting view on it, right? So as our business grows, so 6 years later, one of the biggest banks in South Africa has by and large trying to copy exactly what we've done.
Yeah.
Now, if you think about what the customer of tomorrow looks like, right? You and I might opt for FNB today because, oh, we know them. They've been around for 70 years. They've got 500 branches. They've got their own ATMs. But Joshua, my son, will say, you guys copied the innovators. So guess who I'm going with?
Yeah.
I'm going with the innovator.
Yeah.
So the way we look at this, by FNB doing this with Pick n Pay, all they've done is added credibility to our model. They've just further legitimized what we've already been doing for 6 years.
Right.
That's the way we see it.
Now,
we have the view, the more the merrier.
Mm.
Because I can guarantee you're going to read all the articles that's been published. So FNB is only testing it in 12 stores. They've put a lot fancy. We've just got a kiosk. But go and read the long list of stuff they can't do there.
Mm.
Right? Our ability to fulfill, because of our operating model, because of the way we use technology, our ability to fulfill at point of sale is always going to be light years ahead of this. Now, I promise you, if you go to the FNB kiosk today and we do a race, a time study, and say, FNB, onboard a customer, Time Bank Ambassador, onboard a customer, we must probably do 5 in the time they do one.
Wow. Okay.
Easily.
That's a lifetime. Yeah.
Easily.
Yeah.
Now, if you're that one person and there's a queue at FNB and you see just as 5 people's left the Time Bank kiosk already, why would you continue standing in that queue? So when I talk about this knowledge gap,
right.
The top two requests our customers make from us, they want us to have branches and they want us to have ATMs.
I was going to ask you about that. Like, what are the main, because people want cash, you know? Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And this is the one thing. These are the two things I think we're going to be completely stubborn on. We've given them black cards. I think we're not listening anymore.
Yeah.
Right. You're not going to give branches and ATMs. Mm. Here's the interesting thing. So look at this. So this is Capitec's latest pricing. They updated these fees in, call it January this year.
Right.
But look what they've done here. At any bank's ATM in South Africa, 10 rand per 1,000 rand.
Right.
It's the first time ever that they no longer differentiate between the price of using a Capitec ATM versus the price of using a non-Capitec ATM.
At any bank. So it's then they don't care anymore. Okay, I got you. Okay.
It's the first time they're doing that.
Right.
It's the first time ever.
Yeah.
Right? So this is what they published. But look at this pricing. Capitec to Capitec payment. You know what that is?
Yes, yeah, it's a transfer.
It's an EFT from a Capitec account to a Capitec account. They're charging customers 1 rand.
Is that wrong?
But more importantly, look at this pricing. No decimals anymore. Flat fees, 1 rand, 2 rand, 3 rand, 6 rand, 10 rand.
Hmm.
Right? Look what we did a small edit. We haven't published this, but we've done a small edit to it.
Okay.
right? So they've got a 7 rand monthly fee. We said our monthly fee is zero. It's always been zero.
Okay.
Capitec to Capitec payment, 1 rand.
Okay.
So a time bank to time bank payment, it's free. Okay. It's always been free.
Okay.
Payment to other banks, so Capitec to Standard, Capitec to FNB, Capitec to Time Bank, they charge their customers 2 rand.
Mm-hmm.
At Time Bank, if you do an EFT to any bank,
mm-hmm.
we don't care. It's always been zero.
Okay.
A debit order has always been zero with Time Bank. Okay. They charge 3 rand.
Okay.
Immediate payment is the only place they are cheaper than us.
Okay.
They charge 6 rand. We charge 7 rand.
Okay.
And we've always priced our ATMs like this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I say our ATMs, I think the ATM transaction. So we're saying we've always priced it this way. But more importantly, not only are they much more expensive than us, they've now copied our pricing philosophy. Mm. Here's the point I make on knowledge gap.
Right.
Right? How many do you genuinely think customers have stopped queuing in that Capitec ATM queue?
They have not. I mean, it's, yeah, it's just, no.
He said, so even though it's the same price now for that same Capitec customer to walk over the banking hall to the NetBank ATM that's most probably empty and use it. No other bank has followed us yet. They're the first ones to follow us.
Right.
But yet customers are asking us for ATMs. And what we're trying to tell them is any ATM is a time back ATM. Choose the one with the shortest queue. Now, when I say knowledge gap.
That's the time back ATM.
When I say knowledge gap, the unfortunate reality, mass South Africans, we have no appreciation for how expensive our time actually is.
Yeah.
Right? But now let's think about how this actually plays out in the real world. Is it so? So month end is when those queues are the largest. Right? We've got people standing in those Capitec ATM queues and other bank ATM queues, not as long as Capitec's. But those people will stand in this queue for an hour, up to 2 hours on a Friday evening or a Thursday to get cash, like you said, because they want cash.
Yeah.
But I can almost assure you that 80% of that people in that queue have to travel with public transport.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But now they've wasted 2 hours in this queue, which means they there's 2 hours less for them to spend at home with their family.
Yeah.
There's 2 hours less for that adult to potentially help their child with schoolwork.
Yeah, yeah.
There's 2 hours less for that adult to potentially make a nutritious meal.
Yeah.
Now, is the adult actually losing out? Yes, they are. But guess who the real damn victim is? It's the child.
Yeah, yeah. I actually didn't know that you could go to any ATM. In fact, I never actually use ATM because I didn't know. When I see people in my local ATMs, I would say, like, just go to that one. They will charge you the same amount. You don't need to be here because it's so long sometimes. I mean, you see, it's like...
But I'm saying, we because we don't know enough, we don't even value our time properly.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's what I'm like, it's consumer education, financial, it's not one thing, it's not going to fix this thing. Do you think so?
Yeah.
But what's definitely going to slow down the fixing is if the choir continues singing the bullshit they're singing today.
Yeah.
It's going to slow it down.
Yeah.
Guaranteed.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But we're going to continue singing because we think once people start, and again, because the customer of the future is completely different.
Yeah.
It's completely different. And I think customers of the future are going to hold businesses like ours and our competitors a lot more accountable for what it is we choose to do, how we choose to do it, how we price them, et cetera, et cetera. I think customers of the future are going to hold us a lot more accountable.
Yeah. Before we wrap up, I see we are out of time. So you've got Nubank. I mean, it's successful. I think it's a model. I think people... so you've got it as a shareholder. How do you see that developing? I mean, I'm guessing. Yeah. I mean, you've got and Tate Motsepe as your shareholder. I mean, I'm sure your business and social cause of the company is close to his heart. But how do you see Nubank
your relationship with them? How do you see that developing, and what are you getting out of that?
It's amazing, right? So, so obviously, they wouldn't have written a $150 million ticket if they didn't believe in what the future of this business looks like.
Yeah.
One, they also wouldn't have invested in a business in markets they thought they could potentially operate in. Right. So I think at the highest level, we must look at it that way. So for example, we'll never go open a bank in Pitol because they're that good in their own market. We're not going to go open a bank ever there. Right. Even before they were a shareholder. But I think they've got the same view about the markets we operate in.
Okay.
Right. So if you look at the markets we've chosen, South Africa, great opportunity to disrupt. Philippines, great opportunity to disrupt. We're socioeconomically very similar customer sets, but they're 110 million people. We've got an office in Vietnam, 100 million people. Massive opportunity there. We're looking at stuff there. And then we've also got a small team in Indonesia now that is doing business lending already. We've went live there. But I'm saying if you look at the markets we're operating and where we've got a head start in, it's most probably the same markets that Nubank would want to have presence in over time.
Right, right.
So the question they had to, I suppose, ask themselves, do we go there ourselves? Or do we invest in a business that's already making strides there?
Yeah.
In the same way we would never go to Brazil ourselves. Right? So it's so this level, there's a very symbiotic relationship there. Very, very specific product skill. So if you're going to look at their business, for example, credit card has been a massive game changer for them and for the Brazilian consumer.
Right, right.
Right. Time Bank doesn't have a credit card we can talk about today.
Yeah.
So the question is, how do we pull that learnings in, right? Mm. Other way around, for example, Mexico is Nubank's newest market. They've only got 1 million customers there, right? But the market's very different to Brazil, right?
Mm.
But now the distribution model in South Africa could potentially make a ton of sense in Mexico.
Yeah, yeah.
But we're the experts, so we're going to potentially export that expertise.
Yeah.
Into Nubank Mexico, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So you get a sense of where there's going to be massive business benefit that way.
Yeah.
More importantly, remember I told you there's $66 billion market cap. You know what economies of scale that shareholder brings to your table when you negotiate? And a simple thing is that they use MasterCard in Brazil. We use Visa in South Africa.
Right.
But because of their size, they've got a lot more negotiating power at the table with the association. Right? But I'm saying what Visa has to do in South Africa, for example, is they have to look at it and think, shit, there's a good chance we lose this business to MasterCard.
Right. Right. Right.
That potential exists.
Hmm.
So how is it that, so now we believe we're going to continuously get more value out of our supplier relationships because of this big shareholder. Right?
Okay.
You look at how we build our technology all in the cloud using cloud services.
Mm-hmm.
Again, with this puzzle on the negotiating table. Because I promise you, Nubank uses Amazon Web Services. Time Bank uses Amazon Web Services.
Yeah.
We no longer have to go to them as two separate entities anymore.
You as one big.
So the economies of scale that these kind of shareholders bring to the table, Tshisetso, is game-changing.
Yeah.
Now, in a business like ours, where our cost to acquire and cost to serve is already at least 10x lower than anybody else.
Yeah.
The thing that sets our business apart is what we call operating leverage, right? So last year, I think we grew our income 103% or something like that. And we grew our costs 4%.
Right.
Now, what that equation, they call it the jaws, right? You will know the jaws.
Yeah.
Is that we can build our top line without growing our cost line proportionately.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now,
what's your cost to income ratio now?
It's, I think the last report was 88. I think the last report was 88.
Okay.
But it's gonna be the lowest in industry in 18, 24 months time.
Okay.
Remember, because now we're essentially out of the jail.
Okay.
Right? Because you'll know that our first break-even month was December 23.
Yeah.
We're pushing really hard. We believe this financial year could potentially be our first full profit year.
Right.
And once you get out of that jail,
yeah,
all that happens to your cost to income when you've got a jaws of 100% at 4%, all that happens is that cost of income, it starts diving down. Right,
right. Right.
Because you've seen the business through its investment.
Where, because I mean, that's probably one of the measures that people look at, where for you to stay competitive. Do you see that like in the 35% settling down? Is that even too high? Jesus,
that's too high for us.
Right. Okay.
Right, so Capitec, what's Capitec at? 33 or something?
Capitec's 39.
We believe we can be sub 30.
Okay. Right.
We believe we can be sub 30 because again our business is predicated on scale.
Sure.
And we can be sub 30 again, not at the expense of our customers.
Yeah. Okay.
Not at the expense of our customers. Because we play the scale game and because we've got operating leverage in the way that we operate.
Yeah.
So we think we can be we know we'll be sub 30.
Oh, that's ammunition to
call it at our maturity when we're consistently writing profits as a business.
Right.
There won't be a bank that matches us on cost income. So I can tell you right now, outside ideas, our call center, we sit in the same office.
Okay.
At a ratio, if you go and calculate call center agent to number of customers at any bank, there's not a single bank that will come close to our ratio. Not a single bank that will come close to our ratio. Again, the way we've built our technology, the way we serve customers, what we can make available on your device, et cetera, et cetera. Right? Is that our cost to serve is just, it's so different to any of these other guys.
Cheslin, I really appreciate this conversation.
I think you know where to find us, huh?
Yeah, sure thing.
Cool. Bye.
And that's a wrap for today's conversation on the Business Day Spotlight. A big thank you to Cheslin Jacobs for joining us and breaking down Time Bank's story. I enjoyed this conversation. I hope you did too. And make sure you hit that subscribe button so you never miss out on the latest insights from the leaders shaping our world. Until next time, I've been your host, Tisetso Motsweneng.